The first time I slept with her, her husband was sitting 10 feet away, watching. Didn't blink, didn't speak. Just sat there while I gave his wife everything he couldn't. They paid me $5,000 a month to keep showing up. But before you judge me, before you think you know what kind of man I am, let me take you back. I was 19, broke, living at home. And that summer job cleaning pools, it started out like any other. Until I rang the Ridgeway's doorbell and stepped into a world I was never supposed to see. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The beginning. I never expected my life to take the turn it did. One minute, I was just some broke kid fresh out of high school. No job, no plan. Living in my mother's house at 19, dodging responsibility like it was a sport. The next minute, I was deep in something I couldn't explain, let alone control. But before I get ahead of myself, let me take you back to where it all started. My mom had just come home from a brutal shift. I could hear her keys hit the counter, then a drawer slam. I was on the couch halfway through a game of Madden, trying to tune out the world. But her footsteps were like thunder, and within seconds, she was in my face. "You need to get a job, Jason. I'm done taking care of a grown man." She didn't sugarcoat it, and honestly, she was right. I had run out of excuses. That moment hit me hard, not just her words, but the truth behind them. I was wasting time. So I got up, shut off the console, and started looking. 2 weeks later, I landed a job at a local pool company. The pay wasn't amazing, but it was a start. Miami heat, long hours, chlorine in my lungs. I didn't care. At least I was building something. I told myself I'd do it for a while, stack some cash, then figure out the next move. What I didn't know was that the next move would find me, and it would change everything. Chapter 2. The pool job. The pool job turned out to be more than I expected, not just physically, but mentally. I was out in the wealthier corners of Miami, servicing homes that looked like magazine spreads. Palms swayed, marble driveways gleamed, and every client seemed like they were playing a part in some kind of reality show. I was the help, the guy in the branded polo with a skimmer in one hand and a checklist in the other. But I was good at it. And it didn't take long before my boss noticed. A few weeks in, he handed me a new route and tossed me the keys to my own company truck. "North Coconut Grove," he said. "New client, high end. Don't screw it up." I didn't. The house was a modern mansion tucked behind sculpted hedges and stone lions, the kind of place where silence costs seven figures. I pulled into the driveway, adjusted my cap, and was greeted by the gardener, Ralph. Quiet dude, polite. He gave me the tour, showed me the equipment setup, and left me to it. I popped in my earbuds and got to work, losing myself in the rhythm of the job. The sun was on my neck, the pool glistened like glass, and the sound of water cascading from the stone fountain made it easy to forget how far from home I really was. And then, I felt it. That strange feeling, like someone's watching. I turned, casually. Just a glance over my shoulder. There she was. Second floor balcony. Leaning slightly against the railing. Blonde hair pinned up. Sunglasses hiding her expression. But her body language. It spoke loud and clear. Miss Ridgeway. I turned back around instantly, pretending not to notice. My heart picked up its pace, though. I stayed focused, finished the job, logged the service, and packed up. No words exchanged, no conversation. But her presence lingered, like the aftertaste of something you're not supposed to want. As I drove away, windows down, the Miami breeze in my face, I had no idea that wouldn't be the last time I saw her. Not by a long shot. Chapter 3. The encounter. There are some women who don't need to say a word to make a room feel heavier. Miss Ridgeway was one of them. I couldn't tell you her exact age, mid-40s maybe, but she wore it like armor. Flawless skin, eyes that held too much history to be innocent, and a body that made you forget how to breathe. And for a woman of her status, white, wealthy, married, that hourglass figure was more than unexpected. It was a statement. Still, I kept it professional, always. I'd been around temptation before. Working in this business, you get used to rich housewives testing boundaries, leaning a little too close, asking questions that have nothing to do with water pH. But I made it a rule: stay focused, stay quiet, and never get personal. So when my boss called a few days later and said, "The Ridgeways are requesting you specifically," I didn't think much of it. Clients ask for me all the time. Comes with being reliable. Still, something about the way he said it stuck in my head. That afternoon, I wrapped my other jobs early and headed back to Coconut Grove. I expected to see Ralph again. Figured he'd be the one to walk me through whatever extra work they had lined up. But it wasn't Ralph who opened the door. It was her. Standing there in a sleek robe, makeup light but deliberate, like she wanted to look effortless, and nailed it. She greeted me with a smile that hovered between friendly and something else. "Good afternoon, Miss Ridgeway," I said, clearing my throat. "I've got a service order here. Should I run it by Ralph?" "He's off today," she said casually. "I'll show you." I hesitated, just for a moment, then followed her inside. The marble floors echoed under my boots. Every step felt too loud, too intimate. She walked ahead, her robe swaying just enough to reveal more than intended, or maybe exactly what she intended. I kept my eyes forward, focused, but there was something in the air, not perfume, not tension. It was control. She had it, and I was already too far in to walk away. Chapter 4, The Task. She led me through the house like I belonged there. Every corner of the place screamed curated wealth, from the polished stone accents to the oversized abstract paintings hung with surgical precision. But I wasn't here for the art. Miss Ridgeway paused at the sliding glass doors leading out to the pool deck. She turned to me, her tone shifting to something closer to business, but still laced with something softer underneath. "We need the entire deck pressure washed," she said, gesturing with a slow wave of her hand. "Also the loungers, the day beds. Everything needs to be spotless. We're hosting guests this weekend." I nodded. "That's a service we offer, but it's a separate job. Different equipment, and I'm not usually assigned to those." She tilted her head. "We'd prefer if you handled it." "Not we. Her." "I'll need to start early," I said. "It's a full-day job." "That's fine," she said. 8 a.m. tomorrow?" I agreed, scribbled a note in my phone, and stepped back inside. As I made my way toward the front, I could feel her eyes lingering. I didn't look back. That night, I called my boss to update him. He was all for it. Told me to swing by the shop first thing in the morning and pick up the gear. Everything would be ready. By 7:45 the next day, I pulled into the Ridgeway driveway. The sky was clear, the heat already building. As I stepped out of the truck and headed around back, I caught sight of her on the deck, mid-workout, dressed in skin-tight athletic wear that didn't leave much to the imagination. She glanced over and offered a casual wave. I nodded back, trying to play it cool. My focus was the job, nothing else. I set up the pressure washer, checked the water line, adjusted the nozzle, and got to work. The engine roared to life, and the first blast of water sent dirt flying off the limestone. I slipped into the rhythm. Slow, deliberate, precise. And then I noticed her. She was back on the balcony again. Same place as before. Watching. At first, I chalked it up to quality control. Maybe she just liked to make sure her property was being handled right. But the longer she stayed, the more it felt like something else. Her eyes didn't follow the hose or the equipment. They followed me. A few times, I turned my back and tried to pretend I didn't feel her presence. But it was there. Like heat off the pavement. Unspoken. Heavy. Undeniable. By noon, the work was halfway done. The party was still days away. But the games? They had already started. Chapter 5. The Offer. The sun climbed higher, the deck shimmered with heat, and I was neck deep in work, or at least trying to stay there. But everything about that place made it hard to focus. I'd slipped back into my rhythm, headphones in, music loud enough to drown out my thoughts. The pressure washer hissed and spit as I moved across the stone like clockwork. Still, every now and then, I'd feel it again, that invisible pull, like a magnet behind my spine. At one point, I turned, and there she was. Miss Ridgeway, sunbathing now, reclined on a lounger in the far corner of the pool deck, barely dressed, if you could call it dressed at all. Her swimsuit was strategic. Minimal coverage, maximum impact. Her eyes were closed, but something about the angle of her head made me feel like she wasn't really asleep. More like waiting. I looked away fast, focused, scrubbed the waterline, adjusted the nozzle, told myself, don't look back. But I did. And when I did, she wasn't on the lounger anymore. By the time I finished, the afternoon haze had settled in. I started packing up the truck, rolling cords, locking down the gear, when the maid approached me. She'd like a word, she said softly, gesturing toward the house. I nodded, wiped the sweat from my brow, and followed. Inside, the temperature dropped. Cool marble under my boots, air thick with citrus and something floral. Miss Ridgway was waiting near the staircase in a pale robe, still damp from the pool. Her hair was loose now, her posture relaxed, but her eyes locked onto me the moment I stepped in. You did excellent work, she said. Really? The deck looks perfect. Thank you, ma'am, I replied, trying to keep it professional. She walked a few steps toward me, her voice lowering. I wanted to give you something, a tip, for your time. My purse is upstairs, and actually, there's a shelf in the closet I've been meaning to fix. Do you happen to have your drill? Yeah, I said slowly. In the truck. She nodded. Would you mind? I hesitated. Just a beat. No problem. I grabbed the drill and she led me upstairs, past a hallway that opened into the master suite. As we entered, I caught a glimpse of Mr. Ridgway, seated at the far end of the room on a business call, eyes focused on a tablet. He barely acknowledged us. Just a nod. Miss Ridgway pointed to the walk-in closet. It's in there, she said. I'll be just a minute. The closet was spotless, like everything else in that house. A single shelf had come loose near the back wall. An easy fix. I got to work, but halfway through the drill slowed, battery dying. I'll need to grab the spare, I called out. Don't worry, she said from the bathroom. Just come back up. I'll leave the door open. I should have known then, but I didn't. I was walking into something I couldn't undo. Chapter 6. The Shower. I climbed the stairs with the extra drill battery in hand, heart thudding harder than I wanted to admit. The house was quiet. Too quiet. The kind of silence that feels rehearsed. Controlled. As I approached the master suite, I could hear the water running, a steady stream echoing off marble. The bathroom door was slightly ajar, just as she said it would be. I paused. Miss Ridgway, I called out. Her voice came back, soft and deliberate. It's fine. Come in. Everything in me hesitated. I wasn't naive. I knew what this looked like, what it was. But I walked in anyway, careful steps, every nerve on high alert. The bathroom was pure luxury, ivory stone, gold fixtures, a rainfall shower tucked behind glass. And inside it, Miss Ridgway, naked, wet, unbothered. She wasn't coy. She didn't cover herself. Just turned slightly under the falling water, catching my eyes with hers. You can relax, Jason, she said, almost teasing. You look like you've seen a ghost. I didn't answer. I wanted to walk back out. I should have walked back out, but my feet didn't move. My thoughts were scrambled. The kind of scrambled that has nothing to do with logic and everything to do with adrenaline, temptation, fear. It didn't help that Mr. Ridgway was somewhere in the house. Maybe even just down the hall. You don't have to do anything, she said, her voice a whisper beneath the sound of the water. Just join me. Let it happen. She reached out and opened the glass door. The air between us pulsed. My instinct screamed one thing, my body whispered another. I stepped inside. The heat from the water met the heat on my skin. She moved closer. I couldn't breathe. Her hands were on me. And just behind the blur of steam and soaked glass, movement. It was him, Mr. Ridgway, watching, sitting just outside the bathroom, half in shadow, silent, not angry, not shocked, just watching. Everything in me froze, my muscles locked, My heart pounded like it was trying to escape my chest. My thoughts spiraled. Is this a setup? Am I about to be arrested? Is this some rich people game I don't understand? She noticed. You're tense, she whispered. You're safe. I promise. But nothing about it felt safe. It felt dangerous. It felt like stepping onto a ledge with no guarantee of ground beneath. Yet there I was, standing in a stranger's shower, with a married woman pressed against me and her husband in the background, like it was all perfectly normal. It wasn't normal. It was the beginning of something twisted, something I couldn't walk away from anymore. Chapter 7, The Aftermath. I don't remember the drive home. My hands were on the wheel, but my mind was still in that marble bathroom, still standing under that rainfall shower, soaked in guilt and disbelief. Her words echoed in my head, "You're safe." But I didn't feel safe. I felt set up. I walked into my apartment like I was expecting flashing lights, a badge, maybe a neighbor already gossiping about what they'd heard. But there was nothing. Just the usual hum of the AC and the quiet ticking of a life that hadn't caught up to my choices yet. I sat on the edge of the bed and stared at the wall. Minutes passed. Maybe hours. I don't know. I got up, walked down to the corner store, and grabbed a bottle. Something strong, something cheap. I needed to forget for a night. But I didn't forget. Not even close. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw her. Saw him. That eerie calm on his face while I stood there, frozen in fear and lust and confusion. I couldn't figure out who was more dangerous, her, for seducing me, or him, for letting it happen. By morning, I was still free. No knock on the door, no text from my boss. Just another work order waiting in my inbox like nothing ever happened. I dragged myself into the truck and hit the route. Chlorine, palm trees, rich clients with cold smiles. It should have felt normal, but now everything felt off, tainted. I was stuck in replay, the way she looked at me, the confidence in her step, the chill in his silence. Was it some kind of arrangement, a power game, a marriage built on shadows? All I knew was that I wasn't just the pool guy anymore, not to them, not to myself. I'd crossed a line, and lines like that don't disappear. They stain. Chapter 8, The New Normal. For a while, nothing happened. And that was the strangest part. No texts, no calls, no weird surprises, just silence. Work orders kept coming. My phone buzzed with customer reviews, 5 stars, polite thank yous. From the outside, it looked like business as usual. But inside, I was spiraling. What happened at the Ridgeways wasn't just a one-off. It didn't stay in that bathroom. It followed me home, haunted my sleep, changed how I looked at every person I met. I kept expecting the fallout, some kind of price to pay, but it never came. And in that silence, I started to slip into something dangerous, acceptance. Meanwhile, things at home were shifting fast. My mom, who used to be the loudest voice in my ear, was suddenly quiet. And I figured out why. John, tall, bald, with a trucker laugh and the kind of cologne that sticks to your couch for hours. John was around all the time now. First, it was just dinner. Then a few overnight stays. Then, he was there. Always there. Loud, comfortable, permanent. And every night, I heard it. My mother's room, the walls not thick enough. Her voice rising in a mix of laughter and moans while I sat in the living room pretending not to exist. That sound, of her letting go, of him taking space, started eating at me. I wasn't jealous, but something about it twisted in my gut. It felt like I was being replaced, like my childhood had been evicted overnight. And just like that, home wasn't home anymore. So I stopped sleeping there. I stayed late on jobs, crashed at friends' spots, kept my phone charged and my mind numb. I started saving every dollar, knowing I had to get out. The freedom I'd felt with the Ridgeways, twisted as it was, showed me something. Power. And for the first time, I realized how little of it I had under my mother's roof. I wasn't ready for what came next, but I was hungry for something more. Chapter 9, The Girlfriend. Just when I thought I was losing grip on everything, Tracy came back into my life. We'd been on and off for years, never quite in sync, never quite apart. She was the kind of woman who saw through my bullshit, but didn't throw it back in my face. Tracy had this way of making things feel simple, even when they weren't. When I told her I was finally stacking money and trying to get my own place, she smiled that slow, knowing smile like she'd been waiting for me to catch up. She was proud of me, or at least trying to be. We started spending more time together. Weeknight dinners, long drives with no destination, late night phone calls where silence didn't feel awkward. It wasn't flashy. It wasn't loud. But it was real. And I needed that more than I realized. She made it easy to believe in a future again. One where I wasn't just somebody's worker, or worse, someone's dirty secret. Tracy didn't ask too many questions about work. She just wanted to see progress. A man with a plan. And for once, I had something to offer. I told her I was ready to move out, maybe get a small apartment closer to the Grove, something clean, something mine. She offered to help, said we could look at furniture together, maybe even start over, properly this time. Truth is, I wanted that. I wanted her. Not just the body, though yeah, that too, but her calm, her honesty, her ability to make me forget, even for a little while, the mess I was drowning in. Because when I was with Tracy, I didn't feel like the help. I didn't feel like a pawn. I felt like a man again. But I knew, deep down, something was coming that would test all of that. And it was just a matter of time before it showed up, with her name printed across a new service ticket. Chapter 10, The Dilemma. 2 weeks of peace, 2 weeks of normal. I'd been riding the momentum, getting jobs done, saving my money, spending nights with Tracy, pretending like my life made sense again. For a moment, I really believed I was out of the storm. Then I checked my new route assignments, Ridgeway Residence. I stared at the screen like it had glitched. My stomach tightened. I called my boss. "Hey, is there any way someone else can take the Ridgeway ticket this week?" He chuckled. "No can do. She requested you personally. Said you're the only one she wants handling her property. Left another 5-star review, by the way. I don't know what you're doing over there, but whatever it is, keep it up." He said it like it was a joke, but I wasn't laughing. There it was, the invisible leash I hadn't noticed, tightening around my neck. I hung up and just sat there, staring at the job details, the address, the time, the name. I told myself it was just another pool, that if something was wrong, truly wrong, I'd be in jail already, that no one would ask for me by name if they were planning to burn me. Still, I felt it in my bones. This wasn't over. It had only been paused. And now, it was back. What bothered me most wasn't the memory of her hands or his stare. It was the fact that part of me was curious. Part of me wanted to see what came next. But the rest of me, the part still trying to be a better man for Tracy, that part was screaming to turn around and never go back. I pulled up to the gate anyway, because once you open the door to a certain kind of life, you don't get to walk away clean. Chapter 11, The Proposition. The Ridgeway estate looked exactly the same. Perfect hedges, marble lions at the gate. That same eerie silence wrapped around the place like a velvet curtain, soft on the surface, but hiding something sharp beneath. I parked, took a breath, and got to work like nothing had ever happened. Ralph was back on duty, trimming hedges like it was just another Tuesday. I nodded at him and kept moving. The water was still, crystal clear. I adjusted the chlorine balance, scrubbed the walls, focused on the work. Anything to keep my thoughts from drifting. But I knew it was only a matter of time. And right on cue, just as I was about to finish, I heard her voice. "Jason, can I speak with you for a moment?" I didn't flinch, didn't show the mess boiling underneath. I turned, calm. "Sure, Miss Ridgeway." She led me up the steps to the balcony. The sun cast long shadows over the deck, and everything felt choreographed, like I was walking into a scene I didn't audition for but had already been cast in. On the way up, I passed Mr. Ridgeway. He looked up from his tablet, gave me a smile, and, this part still messes with me, reached out to dap me up like we were old friends. I played along. What else could I do? I reached the balcony and Miss Ridgway was already waiting with a folded check in her hand. "You left before I could tip you last time," she said. "I hate loose ends." She handed me the envelope. I opened it. My pulse skipped. $2,500. She didn't blink. "That's yours. And there's more where that came from." I didn't say anything. I didn't have to. She leaned on the railing, voice low and steady. "My husband and I have an understanding. He's not what I need. Not in that way. But for business, for appearances, we keep the partnership. We just don't share everything." Then she looked at me, not as an employer, not even as a lover, as something in between. "I like you, Jason. I trust you. And I want this to continue." She paused, letting the moment stretch until the air felt thick. "I'm willing to pay you $2,500 every 2 weeks, $5,000 a month. No strings, no cameras, no weird expectations. You show up. We do what we do. He may be in the room. He may not, but he'll never interfere." I stood there, holding the check like it was burning through my fingers. She added, "You have until Saturday. Another $2,500 will be waiting." Then she smiled. Polite, elegant, dangerous. I nodded slowly. "I'll think about it." As I walked back to my truck, the number kept echoing in my mind. $5,000. And behind it, the question I couldn't shake. What's the price of control? And who's really paying it? Chapter 12. The Decision. That night, I took Tracy out to dinner. Seafood. Her favorite. She ordered the Alaskan king crab like it was a celebration. I went with shrimp scampi. We clinked glasses, laughed about nothing, and for a moment, everything felt easy. She looked beautiful under the low restaurant lights, her eyes warm, her energy grounded, real. I watched her crack the shell, dip it in butter, and smile at something I said, and all I could think about was the envelope in my pocket. The silence sitting between us that she didn't even know existed. $5,000. Two worlds. One choice. Later, back at her apartment, Tracy's roommate wasn't home. We settled in on the couch, a little tipsy, a little tired. She excused herself to shower, and I was halfway through a rerun on Netflix when I heard her call out. "Jason," I stood up. "You good?" Her voice dropped into something soft, playful. "Drop those shorts and get in here." I didn't need a second invitation. The shower was warm. The steam curled off her shoulders as I stepped in, and without a word, she pulled me close. It wasn't just sex. It was something deeper. Like we were making up for all the moments we'd lost in our on-again, off-again mess. By the time we made it to the bedroom, soaked and tangled in sheets, I wasn't thinking about money anymore. I was thinking about her, the way her body moved, the way she curled into me afterward, pressing her head to my chest like she was home. But as the hours passed and she drifted off into sleep beside me, my mind went right back to Miss Ridgway, to the offer, the envelope, the proposition. $5,000 a month. No strings, just silence, secrecy, and sex on demand. I thought about the dinner we just had, the $300 tab I covered like it was nothing. Imagine the kind of life we could have, I thought. Me and Tracy, our own place, real furniture, a car, a future. All from a few quiet afternoons in a rich woman's bedroom. It should have been a simple decision, but somehow it wasn't. Because every time I thought about saying yes, I also thought about the price of that yes, not the money. The part of me I'd have to give up to earn it. Chapter 13, The Confession. The next morning, sunlight spilled across the bed like a quiet blessing. Tracy was still asleep beside me, her breath soft and even. I lay there for a moment, just watching her, the way her lips parted slightly, how peaceful she looked. It hit me then how rare that kind of stillness was in my life. No tension, no mind games, just her. When she finally stirred, she rolled over and smiled, eyes still heavy with sleep. "Morning. Morning," I whispered back. She disappeared into the kitchen, humming something under her breath, and I got dressed slowly, not wanting to break the rhythm of the moment. The smell of eggs and toast floated down the hall. I followed it. She had two plates already laid out, a fresh pot of coffee, and that same look in her eyes, like she was letting me in just a little deeper without saying a word. We ate in silence at first. Then, just as I was finishing my last bite, she walked me to the door, stood there barefoot in a t-shirt and gym shorts, and looked up at me. "Be safe today," she said. And then, without warning, she dropped it. "I love you." It didn't come with music or fireworks. It didn't need to. It just landed. Clean, true, and real. I froze. For a second, I didn't know what to say. My throat tightened. My heart felt like it tripped over itself. But I managed it. "I love you too," I said, my voice barely holding steady. She smiled, kissed me gently, and closed the door. I stood in the hallway staring at the floor, trying to process what just happened. She loved me. The girl I'd chased, hurt, lost, and somehow earned back. She loved me. And I had a decision to make. A real one. Because that envelope sitting in my glove compartment wasn't just filled with money. It was filled with a choice. A line drawn in silence, in lust, in secrecy. And now, for the first time, I wasn't sure which side of that line I wanted to be on.